British Sky Broadcasting presents The Coen Brothers, Blood Simple, voiced by Neville Watchhurst on behalf of MCS Agency. The massive letters of the Universal logo girdle the shining globe of the Earth, which hangs amid twinkling stars. On an arrow-straight road, in a featureless landscape, lie the frayed remains of a tire.
The world is full of complainers. But the fact is, nothing comes with a guarantee. Now, I don't care if you're the Pope of Rome, President of the United States, or Man of the Year. Something can all go wrong. And go ahead, you know, complain, tell your problems to your neighbor, ask for help, and watch him fly. Now, in Russia, they got it mapped out so that everyone pulls for everyone else. That's the theory, anyway. But what I know about is Texas. And down here, you're on your own.
Night falls on a bleak terrain covered with donkey pumps. A car speeds along the near-deserted road. Rain falls in torrents onto the windscreen.
Gave me a little Pearl Hunter 38 for our first anniversary.
Uh-huh.
Figure I better leave before I use it on him. I just don't know how you can stand him.
I'm only an employee I'm married to.
Yeah. It's just... I don't know. Sometimes I think maybe there's something wrong with him. Like maybe he's sick. Mentally. Is it maybe me, do you think?
Listen, I'm a marriage counselor. I don't know what goes on. I don't want to know. But I like you. I always liked you. What are you going to do in Houston?
I'll figure something out. How come you offered to drive me in this mess?
I told you I like you.
I never knew that.
Well, now you do.
Stop the car, right?
Ray stamps on the brake. A battered Volkswagen Beetle behind them brakes sharply in response. Ray looks slowly over his shoulder, his vexed expression illuminated by the Beetle's headlights. The Beetle, driven by a man in a large Stetson, pulls out and passes the stationary car.
You know that car?
Yeah.
What's the matter?
I don't know. I just think maybe I'm making a mistake. What was it back there?
Back where?
A sign.
I don't know. Motel. Abby.
Ray. Do you mean what you said before? Are you just being a gentleman?
Abby, I like you. It's no point starting anything now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a marriage counselor.
Yeah. What do you want to do?
Abby and Ray are making love passionately beneath twisted motel sheets. The lights of the passing heavy traffic illuminate an abysmal print hanging on the wood effect wall, a basic coffee maker and styrofoam cups on a shelf. In daylight, the pair lie together. Ray stirs to answer the phone.
Hello.
Having a good time?
Who is this?
I don't know. Who's this? You're still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Ray hangs up, somewhat perplexed, and gets up to look out of the window. Abby's eyes open.
Ray.
Yeah.
What was it?
Your husband.
Abby's face is blank but expressive. A pair of feet in elaborately tooled cowboy boots rest on a desk. On the other side, a man places a large Stetson hat and an envelope of photos.
Would you sweet lips a little closer to the phone? And let's pretend that
the fleshy man with the Stetson observes the man in the cowboy boots, younger and with curly black hair, as he grimly studies the photos of Ray and Abby together in bed.
I know where you can get those framed.
Why'd you take these?
What do you mean? Just doing my job?
You called me, I knew they were there. Why'd you take them?
Well, I don't know. Call it a fringe benefit.
How long you watch her?
Most of 9. They'd rest every few minutes and they'd get started again.
The man with the Stetson has lit a cigarette with a Zippo engraved with the words Lauren and Elks Man of the Year.
Quite so.
You know, in Greece, they would cut off the head of the messenger that brought the bad news.
The younger man glares as Stetson man blows smoke rings.
That don't make much sense.
No. Made them feel better.
Well, first off, Julian, I don't know what the story is in Greece, but in this state we got very definite laws about that. Second, I'm not a messenger. I'm a private investigator. And third, most important, it ain't such bad news. I mean, you thought he was colored. You're always assuming the worst. Anything else?
Don't come around here anymore. If I need you, I'll know what rock to turn over.
The man throws an envelope of money down.
Hey, good. You know, what rock to turn over? That's very, very good. Give me a call whenever you want to cut off my head. I can always crawl around without it.
The dark-haired man watches the private investigator walk out of the ramshackle back office through into the crowded bar on the other side of broad windows. A lean black man dressed in white baseball boots, white trousers and white top steps up onto the bar and down into the crowd. He moves across to the jukebox. A bearded white man in glasses flips a coin. The black man grabs it.
Hold it, hold it.
Several drinkers look up as if annoyed at the record the black man has chosen with the other guy's money. The black guy does a neat little two-step on the bar in time to the music and jumps back down to resume his duties and a conversation with a blonde punter.
Where was I?
You were telling me about the ring of fire. Oh, yeah, right. Now, look, you got all these volcanoes, right? And every time one goes pop, you got the equivalent of what? 20, 30 megatons of TNT?
Erase.
Yeah, I know, Marty. Poor, I'm short.
Did Ray come in yet?
No, it's his night off. Where was he last night?
I don't know where he was last night.
I don't know. Didn't he call? Marty, this is an old friend of mine. This is Deborah. Deborah, this is Julie and Marty.
So those in the corner needs help.
Right.
How long you know Maurice?
About 10 years.
10 years, huh? What are you doing tonight?
Going out with Maurice.
Tell me I have a headache.
He'll pass.
We don't seem to be communicating.
Look, you want to hustle me. I don't want to be hustled.
No, you don't.
It's as simple as that.
Simple as that. Maurice, I'm not here for Echo, okay?
Right.
Right.
Nice guy.
Not really. Did you say your last name was?
A large Alsatian dog pads along a parquet-floored corridor. Ray, shooting pool in a room full of hunting trophies and furniture fashioned from steer horns, looks nervously at the dog. Abby sits on a bed, rootling through a leather handbag. She pulls out a small cardboard box and shakes out from it three stubby bullets. Ray advances cautiously towards the dog and extends a hand to pat its head. It wags its tail.
Oh, they're open.
Abby goes to a basin and tips out the contents of another bag. Ray slowly scrutinizes the framed photos covering the walls, pictures of the dog, of Abby, of Marty. Abby goes to a closet and pulls down yet another handbag. Opening it, she finds a shiny pearl-handled pistol. Ray stands in front of a photo of Marty and Abby in bathing costumes. He traces his finger down Abby's left arm. Ray holds a cigarette loosely between his lips. He stares at Marty's face in the picture.
Ray?
Yeah?
Let's get out of here.
Did you get what you wanted?
Yeah. Let's get out of here.
Drive me to a motel?
You can stay at my place. I'll drop you there.
Where are you going?
See a guy.
Ray, don't go to the bar. I know him. It ain't a good idea.
I just gotta see a guy.
The bar is now empty except for one comatose drinker plus Maurice and Deborah.
Sweet dreams of
you. So it's a deal. You and your colleagues find a way to harness this vast volcanic energy, and I'll just sit back and watch these shit kickers go broke. Howdy, stranger.
Maurice. Sorry about last night.
No sweat, wasn't too busy. You missed a good one, though. This white guy walks in about 1 o'clock and asks if we have a discount for alcoholics. Well, I tell him to get lost. But now Marty's sitting here, and I can tell that he's thinking that maybe that ain't such a bad idea.
Marty sits brooding on the back steps of the bar, his face illuminated by the roaring flames of a kind of incinerator which two men are feeding with items of furniture.
Marty.
Ray approaches and calmly takes up a position facing the seated Marty, who continues staring out towards the incinerator.
Well, what?
What?
Am I fired? Want to hit me? What?
I don't particularly want to talk to you.
Well, you're not going to fire me. I might as well quit.
Fine. Suit yourself. Having a good time?
I don't like this kind of talk.
What'd you come here for?
You owe me for 2 weeks.
No. She's an expensive piece of ass. But you get a refund if you tell me who else she's been sluicing.
I want that money. You got something to tell me, fine.
What are you, a fucking marriage counselor? What are you smiling at? I'm funny, right? I'm an asshole? No. That's not what's funny. What's funny is her. What's funny is that I had you two following. Because if it's not you she's sleeping with, it's someone else. And what's really going to be funny is when she gives you that innocent look and says, I don't know what you're talking about, Ray. I ain't done anything funny. But the funniest thing to me right now is that you think that she came back here for you. That's what's fucking funny.
Marty, seated next to an electric bug killer, stares defiantly at Ray. Ray walks slowly back the way he came.
Come on this property again, I'll be forced to shoot you. Fair notice.
The two men heave a carpet into the incinerator.
Hey, Marty?
Marty reclines in a chair, staring blankly up at the rotating ceiling fan in his back office. Maurice enters.
Marty, thought you were dead. You going home?
No. I'm staying right here in hell.
It's kind of a bleak point of view there, isn't it, Marty?
Maurice, I don't want the asshole near my money. And I don't want him in the bar.
We get a lot of assholes in here, Marty.
Ray sits smoking at the wheel of a parked car. A chunky white phone sits on a side table by an ashtray full of stubs. Abby crosses to the phone, hesitates, then answers.
Hello?
Marty sits in his office, silently holding the phone to his ear.
Marty?
Who was it?
What?
On the phone.
Was it
for you?
I don't know. He didn't say anything.
How'd you know it was a he?
He got a girl. Am I screwing something up by being here?
No. Am I?
I can find a place tomorrow. And I'll be out of your hair.
Well, if that's what you want to do, then you ought to do it.
Ray walks slowly into the rather chaotic apartment. Abby hangs up the beeping phone.
You want the bed or the couch?
Well, couch will be all right.
You can sleep on the bed if you want.
I'm not gonna put you out of your bed.
Wouldn't be putting me out.
Be all right here.
Okay.
Ray walks off down a corridor. Abby watches him reproachfully. Marty remains staring up at the ceiling fan in his office. Abby, likewise, stares upwards at the ceiling fan in Ray's apartment. She sees the light go out in Ray's bedroom. Ray lies, his face bleak, staring up at the ceiling on which move shadows of the trees in the street outside. Marty shifts as if about to get up. Abby gets off the couch and walks, dressed in a simple long nightgown, down the darkened corridor towards Ray's bedroom. She opens the door and looks down at where he lies in the bed, eyes closed. She sits down on the bed, staring intently at his face. He reaches up his left hand and pulls her head gently down to him. Daylight now washes over the street outside. Abby sits up quite suddenly in the bed. Pulling the strap of her gown back onto her shoulder, she gets up and walks back out into the living room. She crosses to a side table and opens up a leather handbag from which she takes out a small compact mirror. She runs her hand through her hair. Hearing panting, she turns to see the Alsatian dog.
Opal?
Marty grabs her from behind.
Well, the nuts out there.
She struggles to reach her bag, but knocks it onto the floor, spilling the contents, which include the pearl-handled pistol. Noting this, Marty lifts her off her feet.
Let's do it outside, in nature.
He carries her outside onto the bare brown grass. She struggles fiercely, getting her teeth around Marty's forefinger and biting with all her strength. She gets in a killer kick to his testicles. He lurches away, falling to his knees and beginning to vomit. Ray emerges from the front door, buttoning his jeans and holding in his hand the pistol. Abby looks desperately towards Marty, who gets back on his feet and staggers towards his car. Ray advances slowly. Marty hurries to move around to the other side of the car and climb into the driver's seat. The dog bounds across the grass and leaps in through the rear passenger window. Abby stops Ray with a hand to his chest. He takes her in his arms as Marty roars away.
Liked seeing his face when he found the dead end.
Marty's car roars back in the other direction. He now walks with his finger in a metal splint. Groups of youngsters smoke and drink by their cars in a beauty spot car park.
Hey, mister, how'd you break your pussy finger?
I love it.
Marty approaches the private investigator who is chatting up an underage girl.
Well, I'm sorry, sweetheart, my date is here. She saw me rolling a cigarette, thought it was marijuana. Thought I was a swinger, okay?
The two men climb into the investigator's Volkswagen Beetle. The investigator activates a broken novelty doll hanging from the rearview mirror whose breasts start to flash alternately.
Isn't that wild?
Marty crossly turns it off.
Stick your finger up the wrong person's ass? You know, a friend of mine a while back broke his hand and put in a cast. Very next day he falls, protects his bad hand, and he breaks his good one. So now he breaks that too, you know? So now he's got two busted slippers, you know? So I said to him, I said, Creighton, I hope your wife really loves you, because for the next 5 weeks, you can't even wipe your own goddamn ass. That's a test, ain't it? Test of true love.
I got a job for you.
Well, if it pays right and it's legal, I'll do it.
It's not strictly legal.
He's right. I'll do it.
It's in reference to that gentleman and my wife. The more I think about it, the more irritated I get.
Huh? Could you tell me what it is you want me to do, or is it a secret?
It's no joke.
The private investigator looks at Marty's deadly serious face.
You want me to kill him?
Well.
Well, what?
What do you think?
You're an idiot.
So this won't interest you, huh?
I didn't say that. All I said was you're an idiot. Hell, you've been thinking about it for so much, it's driving you simple.
I'll give you $10,000.
I'm supposed to do a murder. Now, two murders. Trust you not to go simple on me and do something stupid. I mean, really stupid. Now, why should I trust you?
For the money.
Money. Yeah. That's the right smart of money. In Russia, they make only 50 cents a day. I want you to go fishing.
What?
Go down to Corpus for a few days. Get yourself noticed. I'll give you a call when it's done. You just find a way to cover that money.
Marty gets out of the car, leaving the door open. The private investigator sits looking thoughtful and perspiring somewhat. Marty returns and leans back into the car.
I'll take care of the money. You make sure those bodies aren't found. There's a big incinerator behind my place.
The investigator's eyes narrow. Abby walks into a large, empty apartment.
So you want, like a diamond, your own apartment?
¡Pero hombre, qué diablos estás haciendo aquí! ¿Quién no te dije que te largaras desde ayer? ¡Ándale, recoge tus chivas y vete! Come, I'll show you around.
You sure his apartment is vacant these last days?
Oh, yes. I was just explaining to him that he moved out yesterday. Don't mind Mr. Garcia. He used to be my brother-in-law.
Abby is in the bar.
Looks like the state legislature's out of session.
Yeah, I thought this was where they met.
Listen, you can help me with the problem.
I am?
You're gonna keep an eye on Marty and Ray, make sure nothing happens.
How about it, gentlemen? Let's show our appreciation for Lorraine up there, registered nurse from Bolton, Texas. How about it, gentlemen? Yeah.
Thanks for your race.
Anytime. And you don't have to worry about a thing for a while. Marty went down to Corpus yesterday.
Abby jerks awake in Ray's bed.
He's in the house.
What's the matter?
I could have sworn I heard something.
Door's locked. There's nothing there.
Well, I guess we wouldn't have heard anything if it had been him. He's real careful. Fact is, he's anal, Ray. He told me once himself. He said to me, in here, Abby, in here, I'm anal.
Well, I'll be damned.
I couldn't believe it myself. Me, on the other hand, I got lots of personality. Marty always said I had too much. Of course, he's never big on personality. Now, he sent me to a psychiatrist once to see if he could calm me down some.
Yeah. And what happened?
Psychiatrist said I was the healthiest person he ever met, so Marty fired him.
I don't think you can fire a psychiatrist exactly.
No, I never saw him again, I can tell you that much. Said, Marty, how come you're anal and I gotta go to the psychiatrist?
What did he say?
Nothing. He's like you, he doesn't say much.
Thanks.
Except when he doesn't say things, they're usually nasty.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't, they're usually nice.
You ever get tired?
Hmm? Oh, yeah, I guess. Uh-huh.
Ray pulls her back down onto the bed. Outside on the street is parked the battered Volkswagen. Back out in the darkened living room, the lock of the front door is being forced. The door is opened a crack, and the fleshy face of the private investigator peers in. Pocketing the credit card he was using to force the lock, he now slips inside and shuts the door behind him. He looks warily around, keeping an eye on the corridor to the bedroom. He begins to empty the handbag on the side table. He takes the other bag beside it and rifles through it, finally pulling out the chrome-plated pistol. He breaks it open and lights his Zippo, finding three bullets in the revolving chamber. Seeming to hear a sound, he looks wide-eyed towards the bedroom. He moves as quietly as he can in his two-tone leather shoes across the wooden floor towards the bedroom. There appears to be a glimmer of light coming from under the bedroom door. The investigator seems to change course and heads out through the back door. He walks along the rear of the house and rounds a corner, coming to the trees outside Ray's bedroom window. He looks through the window at the sleeping couple. The investigator stands in a phone box.
Hello.
Marty?
Yeah.
Catch any fish?
What?
Catch any fish?
Yeah, yeah.
What listen, kind of fish?
Listen, is it done?
Yeah, is it? You owe me some money.
If you're fucking with me, you'll regret it.
A neon sign flashes outside Marty's bar. The investigator lights his cigarette as Marty slaps two fish on the desk.
They look good.
Why, you want a couple?
Just the 10,000 would be fine.
You got something to show me first?
The investigator hands Marty a large brown envelope. Marty slides out a 10x8 black and white photo of Ray and Abby lying in bed, their bodies apparently riddled with at least a dozen gunshot wounds. Marty takes a deep breath. The investigator looks on rather twitchily.
Dead?
So, same?
The investigator pushes the fish back across the desk.
What'd you do with the bodies?
It's taken care of. The less you know about it, the better.
Jesus. I don't believe it.
Marty, still clutching the brown envelope, heads for the gent's toilet.
I'm gonna want that picture back.
The investigator eyes the safe on the other side of the office. He looks towards the toilet door, outside which a sign reads, "Employees must wash hands." The man looks around and then stubs his cigarette out on a brass bookend ornamented with the head of a steer. Marty returns, wiping his mouth.
You did say something about some money.
Yeah, money.
Something I gotta ask you, Marty. I've been very, very careful. Have you been very, very careful?
Of course.
Nobody knows you hired me.
Don't be stupid. I'm not about to tell anyone. We have to learn to be discreet. Trust each other.
Marty opens the safe. He seems to slip a piece of paper inside as he pulls out a stack of cash, which he places on the desk with the photos.
For richer or poorer.
Don't say that. Your marriages don't turn out so hot. How did you cover the money?
Oh, it's been taken care of. And the less you know about it, the better. I made a call. It'll be all right.
I must have got money simple. Murder like this, too risky.
You shouldn't have done it. Can't have it both ways.
Marty pushes the money across the desk using the heel of his cowboy boot. The investigator seems to recoil slightly.
Count it. And go.
Nah, I trust you.
Marty's eyes remain starkly open. The investigator stays still, holding the pistol out in front of him as he watches dark blood oozing from the hole in Marty's chest. Marty's head lolls to the left. The investigator slowly raises his Stetson and fans himself. He starts as Marty's left foot slips off the desk to the floor. The man half smiles as he drops the pearl-handled gun to the floor beside him, then kicks it across the floor. He stands, stashing the $10,000 loosely in his jacket pocket. The investigator's distinctive Zippo lies unnoticed beneath the dead fish on the desk. The man puts on his hat and sneers at Marty.
He looks stupid now.
He walks away, leaving the lighter under the fish, and Marty slumped dead at the desk beneath the slowly revolving ceiling fan, blood now soaking his entire shirt front. The jukebox glows in the deserted bar. The headlights of a car trace across the glazed door. The shadow of a man appears at the window. He gets out keys and opens the door. It is Ray. He walks in and looks around. He moves across to the bar and climbs over it. He goes across to the till. Turning on a small light, he opens the till and looks inside a cigar box in the drawer, which contains only some loose change. He looks towards the office. Noticing a light under the door, he walks up the ramp towards it, his boots kicking up clouds from the dusty carpet.
Marty.
He pushes open the door. He enters, then stops, seeing Marty sitting in the chair with his back to him.
What's the matter? You deaf?
Getting no response, Ray walks slowly towards Marty. Ray's foot collides with the abandoned pistol, sending it sliding across the floor and beneath a cupboard. Ray stops short with the shock of the noise. His face is gauntly expressionless as he looks down at Marty. Going to the fuse box, he throws a switch, turning on all the lights. He looks down at Marty's hanging right arm. Blood drips from his fingertips to the floor, where it forms a puddle. Ray walks past Marty and bends down to look under the cabinet, where the muzzle of the gun gleams in the shadows. He pulls out the weapon and balances it in his hand. His face seems to register his terrible realization. The bleep from the desk computer makes him turn to look at Marty. He now walks sadly across and places the pistol on the desk by the gaping fish. Blood continues to drip from Marty's hand and the seat of the chair. Ray goes to lift Marty up, but spins around as he hears a noise from the bar. He locks the door and flicks off the lights.
Marty? What night is tonight?
Ray removes his nylon bomber jacket and begins vainly mopping at the pool of blood. With an expression of resigned desperation, he folds the jacket and carries it, dripping a trail of blood to the basin in the toilets. As he soaks the jacket, more blood drips from Marty's fingers. Blood now begins issuing from his nose also. Ray wraps the jacket in a towel and retraces his steps, mopping up the trail of drips. He goes to try and lift Marty once more. As he does so, his attention is drawn to the pistol on the desk. He now picks this up and stashes it in the pocket of Marty's jacket. Ray drags Marty's body down the back steps of the bar. Ray gets the body as far as his awaiting car. Leaning on the roof of the car, he turns and notices the incinerator. Throwing the blood-soaked rags into the car, he now drives slowly across to the incinerator and tosses them into the flames as he passes. He drives speedily along a deserted road in the darkness.
What's more, in 2 years' time, we'll be experiencing what's known as the Jupiter effect. Where in all the planets of the known universe will be aligned on, causing an incredible global destructive gravitation. John chapter 6, verse 18, the Lord out and tells us that these are the signs by which we shall know.
Marty's body lies on the back seat.
There are many good people disagree with me. I believe that this Antichrist is alive today, living in a 10-nation alliance I spoke of earlier.
This is WKLJ Through the Night. I'm John Leibsay. I'll be here with you till 6 this morning, when Mike Miller will be stepping in. Here's a request we really had a dig for.
Seemingly alarmed by noises coming from Marty's body, Ray slams to a halt and dashes away from the car and runs across a plowed field. He turns and stares back at the car, the engine of which is still running. He blinks and stares around into the darkness. He steels himself and heads back towards the car. He finds the blood-stained rear seat is now empty and the offside passenger door open. Closing the front door, he walks slowly to the rear of the vehicle. Peering round and down onto the roadway, he sees Marty crawling painfully slowly on his hands and knees. Ray gets into the car and backs up. Keeping Marty in the beam of the headlights, he selects drive. His foot lifts hesitantly from the clutch brake pedal. Marty continues feebly crawling. Ray cannot do it and gets quickly out of the car again. He stares at the squirming Marty. Ray fetches a large shovel from the rear of the car. He draws closer to Marty. Standing by Marty now, he raises the shovel above his head. He goes to smash it down on Marty's head. Again, he's unable to do it. Ray turns and stares up the road where he sees the lights of an approaching truck. Marty grabs his leg. The truck draws closer. Ray puts the shovel back in the car and then comes back and picks up the struggling Marty. He drags him back to the car. The truck looms nearer. Ray grabs Marty under the armpits, causing Marty to vomit blood over him. Ray just succeeds in getting Marty into the rear of the car as the huge truck lumbers by. In a huge field of deep furrows, Ray now digs by the light of his own headlamps. Judging that the hole is now deep enough, he plants the shovel in the pile of soil and heads back to the car. He drags Marty across the field, the tooled boots bumping over the furrows. Arriving back at the grave, he tips Marty in, kicking his legs to make them fit. He pauses, looking down. Marty continues to writhe and croak obscenely in the shallow pit. Ray hesitates, and then, almost gently, begins to shovel soil over Marty's legs. Marty's hand reaches into the pocket of his jacket. Marty levels the shiny pistol at Ray. Ray stops and stares as Marty struggles to pull the trigger with his middle finger. The chamber revolves jerkily. The pin snaps down, but the chamber turns out to be empty. Ray bends and prizes the gun out of Marty's hand as if taking a toy from a child. Ray stashes it in his back pocket and then starts shoveling soil onto Marty's face. Soil in the grave seethes hideously. Ray now smashes the shovel down above where Marty's head would be. In the light of dawn, a farmhouse is now revealed in the center of the enormous field. Ray leans against the car, the stub of a cigarette between his lips. He flicks the butt away and then glances towards the grave. He gets into the car, which sits in the field at the end of its own tire tracks. The engine finally fires and he pulls away. On a bleak highway, a huge flock of birds takes off from the roadside as Ray drives past. Stained with blood and soil, Ray peers through the windscreen. An approaching car repeatedly flashes its lights. Ray notes that his own lights are still on and switches them off as the other driver, a rural grotesque, passes with a leering smile and a knowing salute. Ray now parks up at a gas station.
Amy, you all right?
Right? What time is it?
I don't know. It's early. I love you.
You all right?
I don't know. I better get off now.
Well, I'll see you. Thanks, Ray.
Abby.
Ray remains staring out through the glass of the phone booth, one muddy hand pressed against the pane. Abby lies sleeping on a couch. Ray approaches and brushes the hair gently from her forehead. He turns, grave-faced, and heads for the bathroom, the pearl-handled pistol sticking out of his back pocket. She opens her eyes and then, smiling slightly, levers herself up onto her elbow and waits for him to emerge.
Hey, Ray.
She continues to look at Ray as he steps out from the bathroom, twisting a towel in his hands, and sits down wearily in a cane chair. A veiled ceiling light goes on. In the sink of his darkroom, the private investigator is burning a series of 10x8 photos, all the same image of Ray and Abby in bed, but at different stages of being doctored to make it appear they've been shot. The last one bears no traces of any blood or entry wounds. From a brown envelope, the investigator pulls out a printed sign reading, "All employees must wash hands before resuming work." He sticks a hand-rolled cigarette into his mouth. He pats his pockets. With increasing alarm. A light of terrible realization comes into his eyes. He empties the contents out from a leather bag, but still no Zippo lighter. He sits in a chair by the open door, drumming his fingers on the phone he holds on his knee. The ceiling fan revolves above his head. Ray sits propped in his cane chair, asleep with one leg on a small round table. Abby enters the room and looks at him. The noise of the door wakes him. She smiles as he looks towards her.
Why didn't you get into bed?
I didn't think I could sleep. Surprised you could.
He called me this morning.
Yeah. I just wanted to let you know that everything's all right. Took care of everything. Now all we have to do is keep our heads.
What do you mean?
I know about it, Abby. I went to the bar last night.
What happened? Was Murray, sir?
Yeah. He didn't see me, though. Nobody saw me. Is it cold in here?
Well, what happened?
Clean it all up. That ain't important. What's important is what we do now. I mean, we can't go around half-cocked. What we need is time to think about this. Figure it out. Anyway, we got some time now. We gotta be smart.
Ray.
Abby, you should never point a gun at anyone unless you mean to shoot him. And if you shoot him, you better make sure he's dead. Because if he ain't dead, he's gonna get up and try and kill you. The only thing they taught us in the service is worth a goddamn. Where the hell's my windbreaker?
Ray. Just tell me what happened.
That ain't important. What's important is that we did it. That's the only thing that matters. We both did it for each other. That's what's important.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Ray spins to look at Abby.
I mean, what are you talking about? I haven't done anything funny.
What was that?
You're not even acting like yourself. First, you call me 5 a.m. saying all kind of nice things on the phone, and then you come charging in here, scaring me half to death without even telling me what I'm supposed to be scared of. I mean, if you two had a fight or something, I don't care. Just as long as...
Pick it up.
What?
Abby turns, her eyes wide, looking towards Ray.
Well, it's him.
Who?
Marty.
Ray stares back at her, disbelief flitting across his face.
What's going on with you two?
Ray's expression becomes doubtful.
back, whoever it was. I'll get out of your way.
He crosses the huge apartment, heading towards the door. Abby looks on as if confused. Ray reaches into his back pocket and pulls out the pistol.
Left your weapon behind.
Ray places the gun on the table by the front door. The private investigator replaces his phone on the side table in what appears to be Ray's apartment. He replaces the items in the leather bag. Maurice presses the button on an answer phone.
Hi, Maurice. This is Helene, Helene Trin, you know? And I'm calling because I want to know just what the hell that remark you made about Sylvia is supposed to mean. She said you're full of shit, and frankly, I believe her. And hey, I love you too, sure. Anyway, you better call me soon because I'm going to South America tonight. You know, Uruguay.
Listen, asshole, it's Marty. I just got back from Corpus Christi, and there's a lot of money missing from the safe. A lot of money. I'm not saying you took it, but the place was your responsibility, Maurice, and I told you to keep an eye on your asshole friend. Don't come to the bar tonight. I got some bit. What is this? The bar's still gonna be closed tonight. I got some other business to take care of, but tomorrow I want to have a word with you and with Ray, if you can find him.
Ray inspects the rear seat of his car, poking his finger into the blood-soaked foam. He walks away from the car and in through the front door of his apartment. A sporty car pulls up. Ray grabs an old dust sheet and goes to hastily cover the rear seat of his car.
I hope you're planning on leaving town.
You got a problem, Maurice?
No, but you do, cowboy. Have you been to the bar?
Why?
You shouldn't have taken the fucking money. Look at me, man, I'm serious. You broke in the bar and you ripped off the fucking safe. Abby warned me about you. You know what your problem is? You're too fucking obvious. The only two people with the combination are you and me, and Abby, maybe. These fucking things are nothing but coffin nails. Hey, look, Ray. Personally, I don't give a shit, you know? Look, man, I know Marty's a hard-on, but you gotta do something. Say you're sorry, give the money back, get the fuck out of here, or something. Shit. Hey, look, man, it's very humiliating preaching about this bullshit.
Maurice lights the cigarette he swiped from Ray's mouth.
But I'm not laughing, Ray Bob, so you know it's no fucking joke.
Ray gets himself out another cigarette and watches Maurice pass by again, having discovered the dead end. In the rear of the car, spots of blood begin to soak through the dust sheet. In the office of the bar, the private investigator surveys the empty chair.
Damn.
A coupe pulls into the bar car park. In the office, the private investigator bashes at the safe. Abby enters the deserted bar and turns the lights on. The private investigator gets up and heads towards the gents. Abby goes into the office. The private investigator peers out from a crack in the toilet door. Abby moves purposefully to the back door. She surveys the broken glass littering the floor where the door has clearly been forced. She pulls the bolt across. She walks back cautiously towards the desk. She takes in the fish, the open drawers, and the papers scattered over the floor. She looks towards the safe. On top is something draped in a white towel. She picks up the towel and recoils as a hammer falls out of it at her feet. She picks up the hammer and then looks at the combination lock. Twisting it round, she finds one half of it is smashed. She stands up again and looks once more at the fish. The safe stands starkly in the corner of the room. She casts a look at the back door again. A bewildered expression passes across her face. She sits down in the chair. Pressing her face into the cushion, it now becomes clear that she is back in her own spacious apartment, curled up on her bed. The two large arched windows admit a cold glow from the street lamps outside. Abby, still lying clothed on the bed, stirs in the now deeper darkness. She pulls an alarm clock out from among the covers and stares at the hands. In the bathroom now, she pours water into the basin and loosens her hair. She splashes water onto her face. She stops, hearing footsteps in the main room. She splashes her face a final time and then turns slowly to look at the door.
Ray?
She turns and walks slowly to the bathroom door. Outside, sitting on the bed, is a slim figure shrouded in darkness. She pushes open the door, causing the beam of light from the bathroom to illuminate the figure on the bed. It is Marty, neatly and cleanly dressed. He looks at her. She appears terrified.
Love a boy ought to lock the door. I love you. That's a stupid thing to say, right?
I love you too.
No. You're just saying that because you're scared. You left your weapon behind.
He tosses over her compact.
He'll kill you too.
Marty falls to his knees and vomits out a deluge of blood. Abby jerks awake and sits up suddenly in her bed. Her face is bathed in sweat. She looks around as if still fearful of seeing Marty's body on the floor. The apartment is, however, deserted. She looks out through the large windows at the light of dawn in the sky. She closes the door of the coupe and walks across the front yard to Ray's bedroom window. He sits on his bed.
Ray?
She slowly enters the apartment and looks around at the stacks of cardboard boxes.
Where is everything?
In the trunk. In the car.
Ray picks up a clasp knife from the floor and sits.
You leaving?
Isn't that what you want? You want to come with me?
I gotta know what happened first.
Ray busies himself tying up a box and then jerks the blade of the knife through the string. He gets up and turns to Abby.
What you want to know?
You broke into the bar, and you wanted to get your money, and you and Marty had a fight or something. I don't know, wasn't it you? Maybe a burglar broke in and
your gun. Nobody broke in, Abby. I tell you the truth. Truth is, I've been feeling sick the last couple of days. Can't sleep. Can't eat. When I tried, truth is, he was alive when I buried him.
Abby jumps as the daily paper slams into the screen door. Appalled, she hurries away. She leans against a door, pounding on it with her fist.
Abby, what's the matter?
I think Marty's dead. Now, come in.
Well, that's bullshit. The Marty called me after he was jacked up.
The light is switched on in the back office of the bar. The fish still lie on the desk. The safe stands stolid in the corner. The glass fragments lie scattered around the back door. Ray closes the fuse box and examines the desk.
I don't know where Marty is, but he's not dead.
Now you relax and I'll go find him. And stay away from Ray. The guy's gone nuts.
Ray squats by the safe, looking at a photo of Abby and Marty smiling and in their swimming costumes. A perplexed look on his face, Ray sets to rifling through the safe. He pulls out the black and white photo of himself and Abby lying in bed, apparently shot full of holes. He stares in bewilderment at the bleeding wounds depicted in the photo. He gets up and crosses to the desk and drops the picture down next to the fish, under which still gleams the Zippo lighter. Ray gets back into his car. He stops as he catches sight in his rearview mirror of the private investigator seated in his battered Beetle. Ray pulls away, doing a U-turn. Through the arched windows of Abby's flat, Ray stands in the unlit room, looking out into the dark. Abby approaches the front door, lets herself in, and crosses to switch on the light.
Turn it off.
Ray?
In a window opposite, the private investigator takes aim at the pair in the now illuminated room.
Just turn it off.
Why?
No curtains on the windows.
So?
I think someone's watching.
So what'll they see?
Just leave it off. You can see in.
You do anything, the neighbors will hear.
Abby has turned the light back on, but Ray now moves so that the private investigator does not have a clear shot at either of them.
You think? Abby, I meant it. When I called.
I love you too.
You're scared.
Ray!
Ray, having moved slightly, is now shot clean through the chest from behind. The gunman now takes aim at Abby. She looks up and then dives to the floor. Abby scuttles to a corner by the window frame. She lobs shoes at the bare light bulb on the ceiling. She takes careful aim and breathes a sigh of relief as the apartment is once again plunged into darkness. She looks at Ray's body lying on the floor, then moves across to him. She turns on hearing the sound from below. Terrified, she rifles through Ray's pockets and slips something into her own back pocket with an expression of profound relief. She stares in horror as the door handle begins to rattle. She tiptoes away into the bathroom. She leans trembling against the bathroom door. She looks around and sees the open bathroom window. The private investigator hunkers down by Ray's corpse, a heavy pottery ornament in his gloved hand. He sets to rifling through Ray's pockets. Abby moves fearfully towards the bathroom window.
What do you do?
Abby peers down at the daunting drop down to the ground below.
I don't know what the hell you two thought you were gonna pull off.
The investigator brings the pottery ornament down hard on Ray's head and winces in disgust. Abby pulls back from the open bathroom window. The investigator gets up, tossing aside the blood-stained ornament. He walks slowly into the bathroom. He peers behind the tall boy. He moves across to the tub, which is shrouded by a shower curtain. She is not, however, hiding in the bath. He goes to the open window. Removing his Stetson, he peers out and down. He then looks curiously to the left. Pulling back inside, he puts his ear to the wall. Kneeling down by the window, he stretches his gloved hand out of the casement and along the wall to the adjoining window of the next room. His creeping fingers find the sash and lever it up. Abby grabs the hand and brings the sash heavily down on it. She then stabs through the hand, pinning it to the sill with Ray's large clasp knife. Abby steps back, horrified. Private investigator shoots a hole through the partition wall. Light streams through. Abby backs away, staring. The man drops the gun. Abby continues to stand staring. The man punches his left hand at the wall. Abby half smiles and moves away. She emerges into the corridor and walks slowly down it. The man finally succeeds in punching a hole in the wall. As the man struggles to remove the knife from his right hand, Abby walks slowly towards her front door, through which she can see the pearl-handled pistol where Ray had placed it on the side table. As she pushes the door open, the man pulls the knife painfully out of his hand. Abby's hand closes around the gun. She turns and casts a look towards the bathroom. The man quietly lets the sash window down and pulls the dagger back through the hole in the bathroom wall. Holding the dagger in his left hand, he looks up as he hears Abby moving cautiously in the main room. He stoops to pick up his big hat and puts it on his head. Abby, in the darkened room, slides down a wall to sit facing the bathroom door, the gun in her hand. She casts a glance at Ray's dead body. The man walks slowly towards the door. Abby takes aim. She fires right through the door.
I'm not afraid of you, Marty.
The man lies bleeding profusely from the abdomen. His eyes are still open.
Well, man, if I see him, I'll sure give him a message.
The man's eyes, becoming slightly glazed, fix on the pipework of the underside of the bathroom basin. He frowns on seeing a drop of water bulging and teetering directly above his head. The drip wobbles, and then falling, marks the end. You're sweet.